had a dream. Almost like a premonition.
I think there's an attack coming.
My lord, this world will fall.
I need warriors. I'm building an alliance to defend ourselves.
How do you know your team's strong enough? If you can't bring down the charging bull, then don't wave the red cape at it.
We were sent here for a reason.
He said the age of heroes would never come again.
Much anticipated by fans, Zack Snyder's four-hour director's cut of Warner Brothers' 2017 Justice League has arrived on HBO Max. Here to talk about the film is director Zack Snyder, joined by two members of the visual effects team, Weta Digital's visual effects supervisors Kevin Smith and Anders Langlands. Smith's credits include serving as Weta's CG supervisor on James Cameron's Avatar, and more recently was visual effects supervisor on soon-to-be-released Godzilla vs. Kong. Langlands was recently nominated for an Oscar for his work on Mulan and is currently working on Warner Brothers' The Batman. Weta was one of several visual effects houses that worked on the Snyder Cut, so let's get started. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. Zack, Kevin, Anders, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
I'm excited to be here.
So, Zack, let's start with the timeline. I know the schedule was tight. When did you actually begin work on your cut, and how much time did you have to complete it?
Well, my cut, the actual original cut of the movie, the cut of the movie that we were working on, the visual effects before, and just kind of was a cut that I had finished in I think it was January of 2017. So I'd worked on it through November and December of 16 and into 17. And then I finished it in the beginning of February and sort of set it aside after a lot of work. And then when I left Justice League, that was the cut that I put on my laptop top and took home with me. And then now these years later, when the movie actually experienced the renaissance, if you will, it was that version, that QuickTime that was on my desktop, that is the movie that we put back together.
So when was it approved that this would be made, and how much time did you have to complete the work?
Yeah, it was, well, in November 17th, 2 years ago, on the second anniversary of Justice League's theatrical release, there was a huge Twitter storm, and I finally got a call from the studio saying, all right, enough, uncle. What can we do to make the movie? And so I think that's when we really started the process of what would it take to make it. My knee jerk was forget it, because what they proposed, their first proposal was, we don't want to do any visual effects. We don't want to spend any money. We just want to release the movie as is with the previs. And you can imagine I said, yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense. That benefits no one. And so then I kind of told them what it would take. And then when COVID came along, there was a little bit of a window, because some movies went down and there was a availability for some of the visual effects houses. And then we went to work. It was June of 2020.
Okay. So that included shooting one new scene, new visual effects.
Correct.
Tell us about the scope
and we
of
didn't,
the work.
We shot that scene in October. So June, July, August, September. It took us 5 months to get our shit together to shoot that scene. And that was a lot of back and forth. I went with the studio. They didn't want me to shoot anything, and I wanted to. And there was a bit of a struggle there. And it was a green screen shoot. I shot it with these really... I have them here, but this isn't these Canon Dream lenses, which are really tricky and difficult to which are, I'm sure you guys will attest to, come and work with. I just finished the movie Army of the Dead, which I shot entirely with the Dream lenses. Wide open the entire film. We never put a stop on the entire film. And it came out amazing, but it was hard for everyone. Focus pullers, everybody got fired. Nobody got fired. I don't fire anyone. So we shot that scene with Jared Leto and Ben Affleck and Ray and Amber and Joe and Ezra. Ezra was in England.
Ezra remotely.
Yeah, we shot him via Zoom. And then I think we just kind of used a projection on him, some kind of way to make him work in the end. So that was the way we shot it against green screen. And then I shot one other little scene for the very, very end of the movie. But that.
Okay. And we have our friends from Weta here today to talk about their visual effects, but you had additional visual effects houses working on this. So in total, roughly how many new visual effects shots had to be created for the project?
I think the final count is 2,600 and something, 80, something like that. Close to 2,700 shots. So in 6 months, so it's not cool.
Roughly how many visual effects houses were working on it?
I want to say five, maybe. You know, there was a couple small houses that were doing, like, just kind of picking up the crazy stuff. Like, I'm like, oh, I want maybe snow in that scene. It's like, what? It's like every now and then I would say something crazy and they would have to.
Well, Weta, yeah. I know, did about 1,000 shots in this.
Sure.
Let's start with just kind of the overall approach. Visual effects have obviously advanced a lot in recent years. So how did you keep it consistent? How much work from the theatrical that was released in 2017 was used, and how did you keep the look consistent?
In theory, the way we kept it consistent was we pretty much remade all the shots. That's how we get skeptics. I think there's a few that made it through, but very few. Maybe none. I mean, you guys will know better, but like very few shots made it through. I mean, I did a count with Tamara because, you know, the aspect ratio, that change alone, changing the aspect ratio from 1.85 to the original way I shot the movie in Academy in 1.33, that change alone, triggered a massive insanity of redoing. And I think the thing that happened with that was that I asked Tamara, how many shots did we just crop? And it turned, it's 11 shots total that we just cropped because we couldn't redo them. So that's a lot. That's a huge testament to the work that these guys have done, because it's unbelievable. I mean, it's a 4-hour movie. It's a solid 4 hours. It's not like a close. It's 4 hours.
Yeah, 2,700 visual effects shots is a big 2-hour plus visual effects movie by itself.
Yes,
it is. It's a whole other movie.
Well, let's start with talking about Darkseid. Kevin Anders, do you want to start with that?
Darkseid was, I mean, he was originally going to appear as he is now in the version in 2017 version of the film, but when Zach left, then obviously his performance pieces were switched to Steppenwolf, who appeared in like the history lesson scene, for instance. He was swapped out there, and that scene was cut down dramatically in the version that eventually made it to theaters in 2017. But because he was there originally, we'd actually gotten a reasonable way with building his character, which was great because we didn't have a lot of time to build him from scratch this time around. So it was a question of bringing him back to life, really, and then just polishing him off and adding, you know, that extra little bit of love and attention for those really big hero moments we have with him now. You know, he has a really strong fight scene in the history lesson, the flashback scene where Diana's narrating the history of Darkseid and all that stuff. And then he appears at the end of the movie in a bunch of shots that Kevin was doing, you know, where he faces off with Superman at the end there. And he's got his really hero moments where he's just, you know, looking all imperious and staring Superman down. So it was great in a way to bring sort of two different versions of the character to life, right? You've got this younger version of him that we see in the flashback that sort of, we played a bit more sort of animalistic and younger, more aggressive, full of testosterone, maybe you could say. And then this older version of him at the end of the movie where he's, you know, much more regal in a way. We see him surrounded by his whole entourage, you know, all of his armies and his acolytes. And he plays as much more reserved and just imperious as opposed to the more wild aggression we see earlier in the film. So it's fun to bring sort of two different versions of that to life there.
So tell us about making the character. Did this involve performance capture?
Yeah, we rely heavily on performance capture for all of the all of our motion, all of our animation performances. Darkseid was played by a couple of guys, Isaac and
Ike. What's Ike's last name? Ike Hammond and Alan Henry.
Alan Henry
did a lot of the I think almost all of the motion capture, performance capture for us across the board. So they had a lot of fun with that because. You go into the volume and it's just like, all right, and you're Batman, and now you're Darkseid, and now you're this guy, and they had a lot of fun with it, just being able to cycle through kind of all those characters and get in the roles and do those performances.
Yeah, and it was with that this whole beat of Darkseid fighting against the Defenders of the Earth in the flashback. There's whole great fight moments that we created, you know, from scratch essentially. Some of it was designed in the original 2017 version, but we fleshed that out a lot more and added a lot more to it. And Simon, our animation supervisor, and our performers got down on the stage and just created a whole bunch of different ideas that we then brought into 3D and started putting cameras on. And then we sent those over so that we could discuss them with Zach and DJ, and they could start figuring out what the shots wanted to be for those scenes. And so that really, like, that time on the stage with the performers really formed the backbone of what those beats ended up being.
Yeah, because I remember we ended up having that. Now we have that moment where we cut the hand off and he has that beat where the ring, the Green Lantern ring comes off and kind of floats in front of him and he's just about to grab it and he gets hit with that arrow. And there's a really nice moment where you see him kind of, he's about to grab it and he has this look on his face like, oh, like that seems like a thing if I get a hold of, will be pretty awesome. I just like that ominous moment where, like, if he'd gotten hold, who knows what would happen if he'd gotten hold of that thing. So it's probably a good idea that Ares put that arrow in his.
So what were some of the visual effects challenges to creating the character and, you know, lighting him and putting him into this world?
He's gray, so that's always difficult.
Right.
Because you say he's going to be gray, but, like, of course you put a gray character in a bright orange environment, like the history lesson, and he becomes orange very quickly.
You get
quickly.
An orange character.
Yeah, so that's always a challenge. Oh, I think
he's right, absorbing. He absorbs, he loves light. He loves the light.
Yeah, he sucks up all the light. And
he loves the color of the world he's in,
Oh, I think he was, his challenges really were,
I would answer that question in a different way. I would say that we're very privileged at Weta to you kind of run into this every interview where, in a sense, we're constantly standing on the shoulders of giants. Like, we're really good at, we're a creature place and we do creatures and characters, and the pipeline here has been set up and developed over the last 20 years since Lord of the Rings for us to do characters and in a sense, and there's always little things for each character, like, oh, he's gray, so it's hard, it makes it difficult to light him, but the quality of the creature development here is such that you can stop worrying about technical things and just focus on giving this guy a performance. He's a completely synthetic actor, and taking the reference that we got from Zach and the production and all the video, the iPhone videos of these guys doing their performances, and trying to make sure that comes through in on screen and it turns that thing from a creature into a character and into a performer in the movie.
Yeah,
the Wolf work that you guys did is really unbelievable too. Just like his, you know, I've gotten so many comments. I've been doing interviews for the last 2 days. I've done like 100 interviews, and literally 100. And so many comments on the Steppenwolf Darkseid relationship, and that it's complex, and that it's not just like these two, like you really like these people saying like how much they kind of like are, they feel bad for Steppenwolf, and they really, you know, like a couple guys like I'm team Steppenwolf, you know, and I'm like, what? No, you're, that's awesome. But I think that's just a testament to what you guys have been able to achieve in the performances, and you know, to get these characters, as you say, that are completely synthetic and have no business making me feel anything, making me like wonder about their backstories or like what their relationship was and all that stuff. That's really just amazing.
Yeah, because that came up in a previous interview, because a lot of people, the immediate thing that you see about Steppenwolf is that he's now completely different. He's not a humanoid. He's this obviously alien guy. He's got this cool shiny armor that, you know, this mood armor that moves with him, which is the obvious thing. But I, you know, people keep asking about that. What about the new design? What about the new design? And our answer keeps being that, like, the new design is a reflection. It's more that it's a reflection of that. It's a different character, and it's a more complicated character. And the addition of Darkseid, and like Zach is saying, all this backstory, it helps him be turned into more of a character than a creature. And I totally agree with you. Like, when he finally dies, he's definitely at that point with all that backstory, becomes a sympathetic character. You're like, oh, yeah. Like, you're not a great person, but I kind of feel bad for you a little bit. Yeah,
it's just great that he has a chance to actually live, you know, in this one, that we actually get time to spend with him and explore that relationship with Darkseid, with the obelisk, you know, moments where he's talking to him and Darkseid, and to understand what his motivations are. And that's always a much more compelling thing for us when we're creating characters like that, not just having someone just go in and swing an axe around for 5 minutes, you know, but yeah, to actually understand who they are, like live, like work through the performance that the actor's given, and bring that to life on that character, and then have that drive the story in the film, you know. And so that was one of the biggest things for us, I think, in revisiting and bringing back Zach's original vision for this, was having these characters much more fully developed, much more rounded, was a huge plus point for everyone involved, I think.
Have you guys gotten the film yet?
Yes. Yeah, I have got a link. I watched it 2 days ago now.
Okay, great.
Yeah, which is great. Much better than the other one. So really enjoyed it.
You also redesigned Steppenwolf. Zach, why don't you tell us about the changes that you wanted to make?
Well, if you watch Batman versus Superman, the Steppenwolf that's in the Genesis Chamber at that end of that movie is basically our Steppenwolf that is here with us now. The studio thought in retrospect that he was too scary and too weird looking, and they wanted a more humanoid, you know, like a softer character. They thought, you know, a guy with a helmet on is fun, more fun than whatever the hell Steppenwolf is now. Our guy, our Mons, he's a monster, frankly. I mean, in a great way. But in developing him, in making him, and now in this version where we were like, okay, we're going to make him real, you know, because we hadn't made him walk. He just had one shot of him in the Genesis Chamber with, you know, he's also made out of liquid Geo, which is that kind of weird metal technology that the Kryptonians use to communicate. I love also, just a quick aside, that we have the Apocalypteans, and they use this hologram technology that is the most primitive thing you can possibly imagine. They basically take molten metal and they like, it makes the form of their bodies, and they talk in it, and like, molten metal drips off of them. Like, clearly, like, it seems like you could have a hologram or some other form of communication, but it's cool that they just use this incredibly brutal way of like projecting their image across, you know, vast areas of space. Anyway, so sorry, that's an aside, but DJ and I always laugh about how absurd that is, but how cool it looks. So we had this character, and then when we were doing our tests with him early on, you know, and like how the mood armor would work, and it immediately struck us as like, okay, this is so much cooler than anything that we were being forced to do by the studio in the old version. So seeing him walk and talk and move, and starting to see like how he would like get mad and his armor would flare out, we were just like, okay, this is just awesome. And the guys did an amazing job making that those two things happen kind of. The trick, of course, is that, you know, performance. And here we have this other super technical aspect of him, and that is that his armor is this kind of scaly, spiky, shiny, like environmentally responsive, complete suit that, like, if he gets mad, kind of gets spiky, and therefore if it's like, if he's backlit or side lit, all the reflections have to do all the correct things and everything else, and they have to not occlude each other. And it's like, it's pretty complicated because he's also moving
right.
a lot of the time.
Right.
So, you know, just in awe of like what the guys were able to do with that.
Right. Yeah. So, Kevin Anders, how did you do it? Tell us about it.
Well, there's a whole army of people.
Yeah.
I know it looks like just two of us, but the technical bit of that was the important thing for us is always to get that performance, to let Simon, who is the animation supervisor, not focus on things that are technical and just try to get a good anime performance about that, and then be able to take that animation, put a complicated simulation on top of it in software called Houdini to get the armor to do the right thing without some poor sucker having to be like, take one piece and move it, take the next piece and move it. So it's all done procedurally. And we try to distill all of the things that made the armor do the things that made it cool down into just one knob where we could go more and less, more or less, more or less.
Wow. That's cool.
And you know, that's fair. That's an overly simplified thing, but it helped us. When we talked to Zach, because then Zach could just go, I want more or less and more or less. So, you know.
And was it keyframe animation or did you do performance capture?
Performance capture for, you know, the base of it. And then those performances are always have a certain amount of keyframe built on top of them, depending on, you know, just for extra finesse or depending on how out there the thing is, whether we could actually capture it with the stuntman on the stage or not doing that performance.
Yeah, like hands are always a problem. I mean, and
especially when he's got two thumbs.
He's got seven fingers. So how do you capture
that? By the way, his hands are absolutely crazy. And I'm always like, wait, is that? Oh, that's his other thumb. That's his weird claw. He has this weird finger like back here on his wrist. And it's crazy. One of my favorite Steppenwolf performance shots, well, there's two. One where he when he arrives in where the history lesson was, where he sees the anti-life equation, you know, after he puts his hands in the mother box and like he's looking around and he's looking super like, what the heck? But the other one I really love is right before Darkseid comes out of the monolith. There's like the side goes back into the monolith and you see him kind of looking around like, okay, like what's going on? And then all the like parademons start to like get down on one knee and like look like they know what's going on. And there's this great look on his face like, what's going on? Like, it's really amazing. We always, I'm always like, oh, always the last to know, Steppenwolf. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it was good fun.
For the scene that you reshot at the end, for the ending, to keep consistency with the rest of the story, was any de-aging work or anything like that involved on any of the actors?
I don't think so. I mean, Ben, weirdly, when he returned to do the reshoots, was in the best shape that I've had him over the last, you know, two movies probably. And so he looked younger. I was like, what is this? Like, are we doing Goodwill Hunting? This is like, honestly, if anything, I had to make him look older. So I don't know where he's been, what fountain of youth he's been hanging out in, but I need to get some of that. And also it would have been, you know, the movie, this is supposedly 5 or 6 years after into the future, you know, the world is destroyed and they're just kind of like this ragtag band. So, we didn't have to de-age them, but, you know, as I said before, there was a lot of complicated, work, to do with these crazy lenses and the guys were able to really handle it quite well.
I think the result is great. They weren't the easiest keys to pull, but I think it looks amazing.
It does. It doesn't look like any movie I've seen, so it's cool.
Talk about directing them amid COVID.
Yeah, I mean, I had done, in the weeks right before that, we had done some additional photography for Army of the Dead, which is the other movie I'm finishing right now. And so we kind of had a little bit, we were in a little bit in the zone with COVID. The unions had figured out their protocols, and so we were able to respond to those. And I was getting tested like crazy because I was the DP and the director of that little shoot, of both. And so, like, weirdly, the two unions hadn't agreed. So because I was in two unions, I had to get tested twice. Saying, like, oh, no, I got tested already. And they were like, no, but you didn't get tested for us. So I'd be like, yeah, but I can't pass it over. So, yeah, so it was a lot of my nose was really getting violated quite badly during that part of the thing. But all in all, it was pretty cool. I did have a couple issues when I was operating, but I had my N95 where I couldn't, like, I started to get short of breath because I'm holding the camera and I was, like, you know, trying to, like, focus and forget to breathe. And then when you try and breathe, you can't get, like, a big suck of air. And so it was, but I'm complaining over really nothing. It was a joy to get to work with those guys. And yeah, so it was fun.
Right. And then how did your COVID procedures affect the work at WEDA and your review and approval process and things like that?
Well, I will say that it made me jealous because a couple times I got on the phone with, I would get on the phone with them and they would be in a boardroom and, or like, a room with a bunch of people and they'd all be sitting there, you know, they'd be drinking and then passing the cup to their friend. And meanwhile, I'm in like a hazmat suit and, you know, unable to like have human contact of any kind. So yeah, that was difficult for me to look at. Maybe wanted to move immediately to New Zealand and just like be that guy. But I resisted that. I don't know why, but I did. but yeah, it was, so from my side, I had already like, we had settled into this crazy COVID system, like where I had editorial was hooked together and visual effects were all hooked together. So up in my editorial bay, I had two Avids and then I had, a second Avid that was a for visual effects, and then I had a big monitor on the wall for reviews, and then we did the visual effects reviews downstairs in my theater. So I just would walk around the house all day, and it would all just get piped in. But so the one positive is that we because we didn't really have life outside of this. We worked late and got up early. So we got a lot done in the time that we had.
So tell us about creating the end sequence, the battle.
Yeah. So I had done some drawings. I doodled this little sequence and I wrote this little scene and, DJ and I talked about it. At first we had talked about
and
a version.
DJ being the production visual effects supervisor for
yeah,
listeners.
DJ's my, visual effects soup who's worked, we've worked with WEDA for years, literally, on creating these movies. And DJ has a great relationship with WEDA and really loves work, as do I. This last process of making Justice League has only, really made that even more, my feeling about it even more complete because of the challenges that they conquered instantly. Debbie was saying that, you know, whatever we do next, we got to get WEDA to do it because it's like, you know, and I said, oh, let's see. We'll see if they're available. So I drawn the sequence and originally DJ and I had talked about doing a lot of it. Like he had a very ambitious look at it where it would just be like 90% digital doubles because of COVID, and we would just get these close-ups and that would be it. And there would be no overs. Like, you know, it'd be very, he was like, we can do it. And I was like, okay, fine. But if we don't have to do it that way, should we probably not? I mean, if we can do like, so we ended up doing like a hybrid, I think, because we do have Cyborg and we do have Flash that are pretty much covered in our digital characters. You know, we do have a virtual environment that's completely virtual and parademons that aren't there. And of course, you know, we're on an abandoned freeway in the sort of dried up, you know, Gotham Harbor. So, you know, there's an aircraft carrier over there and a downed airplane over there. So it's not like, where we were anywhere. We were, and you can imagine that we were just on a green screen with one little like 2K as the sun. So it was ambitious. But the guys, again, they did an amazing, the look is, and it's very looky because of the shallow focus and the weird palette and all this, it's super looky. So, it was also complicated from an artistic standpoint.
Oh, I think he's, said it pretty well there. I mean, I love the shallow focus. It actually is one of those cases where, kind of all these weird's the wrong word, but like all these artistic choices that actually, instead of making it harder and harder and harder, they all actually kind of work together to make it kind of easier for us, because usually when you get the plates from a client, they haven't pointed the camera right at the lights because that's not how you do it. But when we first got the sequence, we looked at it and I said to DJ, I'm like, this is cool. And these are be some hard keys to pull because we're looking at the lights. And as long as you're fine with us making that light into the sun and we're always have the camera pointed at the sun, and then this is going to be easy because we can just lean into this look that Zach got on set. And DJ was like, yeah, that's exactly what we want. We want to treat that like the sun. So we just, that's all we did. We leaned into it and we added, we leaned into the desert and the apocalypticness of it. And they've got like, gritty stuff on the camera and dust blowing through. It all kind of adds up together to make it less technically difficult, even though it was artistically challenging, if that makes sense.
Do you want to elaborate though on the scope of what was involved? The environments, digital doubles. I mean, I'd imagine some of these shots are fully CG.
Yeah, you've got a couple establishers at the beginning that's all CG, and you basically have all our heroes and our actors and a couple practical cars standing on essentially green floor and green walls. So it was up to us to populate that world and give them a coherent place to exist. So most of it on our side was matte painting. We extended the set out a little bit while adding. You add the freeway floor and guardrails, and we added more cars down the freeway. The nice thing about the shallow focus decision up front was that we didn't have to build things up so with such fidelity to build the environment, because it's all out of focus. So you can, you don't need necessarily hero props. You can build stuff that doesn't have to hold up because it's never in focus. It was great, and we even had a couple plates of the Flash of Ezra that weren't shot in the same place, which you could get away with because we're just putting everyone in a virtual environment anyway. So once you create that environment, you can populate that with whatever kind of plates or characters you need to do. It makes it actually a little more, you get a little more freedom to do what you need to do to get it done and match that look.
Yeah, and you guys were able to really preserve. There's the lenses have a particular flare pattern that I'm really in love with, and that really shined through and was and is a big signature piece. You know, when Joker's got like this weird kind of profile shot and the sun's there and there's hair blowing, and then the flares are kind of like all over the place. So there's a lot of tricky elements. You could imagine there's a version where they're like, we can't keep those flares. We can't keep that. Got to get rid of his hair. And suddenly it's just like a shot of nothing. But that I really appreciate the kind of, because the problem is I just come off of Army. And like I said, we shot Army with those lenses, and I was constantly just pointing in the sun and constantly just like chasing the actors around. So I was used to using these lenses in practical environment, where the literal sun was setting, and I, was able to get these crazy flares and stuff. So the fact that they were able to kind of do that kind of same thing in this virtual environment pretty quickly,
right,
I mean, I love it. And when you want to lean into it like that and replace the practical light with the sun and put that virtual environment in there, it's awesome. I mean, the problem, you know, with a lot of times you'll get things from people where they only have the light there to get like this back three quarter light on the character. And they're like, we like the light, but can we get rid of the light and the lens flares? Can you paint
No.
It's like, no, you no, can't you get rid of that. So
yeah. There's nothing under there. There's nothing under those flares. That will be a CG guy now.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's cool. Well, at least I know that. See, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time, but before we wrap, Zach, at this stage, is there? Have you given any thought or has there been any discussion to future films in the franchise?
In this franchise? Well, listen, I mean, not to be, you know, the purveyor of rumors. Look, I'll just say this. You know, I don't know how Warner Brothers, you know, they've told me that they're not super interested in going forward with my version of the DCEU. They have their own kind of way forward, of course. And I respect that because, you know, it's their IP. But, you know, we never thought we'd be here talking about the 4-hour version of Justice League either. So, you know, you never know.
Anything you'd like to say to the fans before we wrap?
Of course, just huge thanks for your support. The movie wouldn't have happened without them. You know, I couldn't be more proud of what they've been able to accomplish, you know, as I said before, with their work surrounding mental health and suicide prevention, because it's unbelievable. So thank you for all that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you guys for the amazing work.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure.